The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
FlyPod.com, I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Have you ever saved a life before? Maybe you've been in a restaurant. Maybe somebody you know has had the Heimlich maneuver. Maybe you've administered that yourself. But we have the person that invented the Heimlich maneuver, Henry J. Heimlich, M.D. Heimlich's Maneuvers is his book. Dr. Henry Heimlich, welcome.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here with you.
Internationally known. What's that like?
Well, it's kind of interesting in a way. You meet somebody, and immediately they know who you are. Now, if my name was Smith, that would not be the case, but there aren't very many Heimlichs around. And it's very gratifying, because it is reflective on what I've devoted my life to, and that is saving lives, devising new methods that will save a person's life.
As a surgeon, doctor, can we call you an inventor? What would be the correct term for this?
I think inventor is fine, particularly being a doctor and having invented many different methods that are used widely in medicine. I have produced 8 or 9 innovations that are saving lives throughout the world. Frequently, doctors are saying, let's do the Heimlich, which there's an operation called the Heimlich, as well as the Heimlich maneuver.
Known for the Heimlich maneuver, but in medicine, you have created a lot of different ways to do things, thinking outside the box, I guess, with different problems of the human body.
Yes, frequently it's the result of an experience that makes me think. The one really that is the longest period in my life, I was in the Navy during World War II. I joined the Navy because I like to sail and work ships. Believe it or not, I was sent up to the Gobi Desert of Inner Mongolia in China.
One of the driest places on earth.
Just about. But it was very wonderful to see. I might say in the period I was there a good year. I not only had the opportunity to treat a lot of people, and that came to me, not when I arrived with our little group. We just had a group of 12 of us. In fact, our code name was the Apostles. And we were there in that spot because right where we were, in northwestern China, in the desert, we got the weather 3 weeks before it hit the Pacific. And we had 2 weathermen in our group of 12. And every night, they radioed the weather that we had there. So every action in the Pacific, where the troops were, depended on that to find out what they should do 3 weeks later. So it was a very gratifying work. And I saw all kinds of diseases there and treated them. And also I learned that China people were really wonderful. But after the war ended, hardly before we left, a man was shot in the chest, one of our Chinese soldiers, and he died in my hands. The war was over, but the soldier in front of him marching had forgotten to lock his rifle, so he was shot and killed there. And there was nothing really I could do for him. However, it changed my life many years later. I was lecturing to a group at a hospital, and I was a chest surgeon. I I became a chest surgeon as one of the early ones. And I was lecturing on caring for these chest surgeons and said that after you operate on them, you have to drain the chest, because if you have air or blood or liquid left in the chest, the lung will stay collapsed. So what you did is you put a tube in the chest after surgery, and you ran it down to a bottle, also a suction machine, which took the stuff out of the chest, which was plugged into the wall to, it was electrified. And as I'm explaining to the younger doctors how you use this, I say to them, you use it just by putting the suction on. Unfortunately, the patient has to be in the bed. You can't disconnect him even to go to the laboratory. But you should know it works like a valve. And I thought to myself as I was driving away that afternoon, why not a valve? Well, I thought about different kinds of valves. And the one valve is a flap valve that has a spring on it, but if a clot got under it, it would stay open. And there's a ball valve, and if the ball rolls off where it is, again, the air comes in, the lung collapses. So I thought about what was then used as a noisemaker. If you blew on it, it was a New Year's Eve thing you blew on. And that was a flattened piece of tubing that made that noise. It was a plastic or rubber tubing. So I got one of them, and I went to one of the very large manufacturers of devices, and they immediately saw it too. If you had a valve, the air would come out, the fluid would come out, but the patient could walk around. They could go home and come back 3 weeks later. Well, I tell you now that during the Vietnam War, which was on at that time, they saved, during the war, 26,000 valves. When everyone carried the Heimlich chest drain valve. It was in a sterile paper envelope or plastic envelope. If your body got shot in the chest, you took your valve and you put the valve in the chest, connected it to the tube to the chest, and you saved their lives. I can only tell you that subsequently there have been more than 100,000 valves used each year for patients who have chest operations and also in emergency cases.
Wow, so you've saved not only a lot of lives with the help of other people, but other people have saved lives in battle and just in medical emergencies because of you also.
That is correct. And the company told me that after the war, there have been already 4 million chest drain valves used throughout the country and other parts of the world. And you can imagine how meaningful that means to me. I have at least 9 or 10 other inventions or operations. I have an operation from very early stages of my being a chest surgeon. For anyone who had a problem with their esophagus, they would drink something that would burn it out, they would get cancer which would block it, they would get ulcers because acid would come up from the stomach. And they had no way to help them. So they took a plastic or a rubber tube and put it into the stomach with a funnel on it. And people for years poured the liquid food, that was entire system. And also some of them had lost the ability to speak. They had burned out their vocal cords and things like that. I devised an operation made from the stomach itself, creating a tube from the stomach and connecting it up just as you would have an esophagus. And the people were able to eat perfectly normally. And I can't tell you how many of those operations are done, but it's many. And interestingly enough, there was a doctor in Romania who had devised the same operation a couple of years before, but it had not been known because Romania was then under the communists, under the Soviet Union. And eventually he got a letter to me, and we got together on it as well.
You know, it was interesting. You were thinking that, you know, how could you do this? And I didn't realize until I read your book, Heimlich's Maneuvers, that the stomach has more acid pretty much on the top of it and a lesser acid on the bottom. And that's where you took that and you devised that more or less tube going up to the esophagus.
Well, actually, what they were doing at that time was they took the stomach. Now, the stomach acid is all formed in the upper half of the stomach, the lower half not. And they took that stomach and they joined the upper portion of the stomach to the esophagus or the pharynx in the neck and restored the swallowing. However, in a very short order, just a couple of years, the acid in the stomach was coming up into the pharynx or into the upper esophagus and was burning it out, and it would close off. They had to go back to the tubes. The operation I devised took the lower part of the stomach, made a tube from that, including below what would now become the upper part of the esophagus or the new esophagus, and joined that in the neck to the throat or to the upper esophagus. And that had no acid in the upper end, so it just stayed there as long as the patient lived.
Now, you know, I have a question for you. You met this lady. Her name was Jane, and she had some famous parents. What was it like the first time you danced in front of Arthur Murray?
Arthur and Catherine Murray, of course, were well known because of their dancing studios. And Catherine had a TV show that went for 10 years as the best show in the country. Jane and I, before we were engaged, but getting close to it, we hadn't set a marriage date, and we hadn't really been out with her parents. And they took us to one of the Grand Hotel ballrooms where they had dance music and very good dinners in New York City, where we both lived at the time. And Catherine, Jane's mother, asked me to dance. And, of course, it was kind of interesting. But we danced nicely together, and she always said just the right thing. She came back to the table and said, "Arthur, Hank is a natural dancer." So I said, "No, Arthur, I said, I haven't taken a dancer in my life. If I said that to people, they might question taking dance lessons." And Arthur, who said exactly what was in his mind, said, "Just don't tell them you took lessons at Arthur Murray's."
Your wife, an author of a few books, what did you learn from Jane that you put into this book and maybe some of the other books that you've written? What did you learn from her?
Well, the main thing I learned from her was she was the most wonderful person in the world. She just was totally honest and open, and she was an excellent writer, had successful books that she wrote, and she was the one that wrote about natural forms of medicine that were being frowned upon. Her books were so good, and she read one of them with a doctor who specialized in that form of medicine. That was very popular, and it brought natural medicine to recognition, and it became and still is widely recommended and used in treating people. Her last book was a book on life with her parents and me, little about me, called Out of Step. And it told how she both agreed and disagreed with her parents and some very funny stories that had gone on.
That sounds like another fantastic book also. Jane, she never did want to be famous. That's why she married you, a lowly doctor from New York, and all of a sudden you have this great success. And before you know it, after your success, you're on the Johnny Carson show. Now, what was that like, being a doctor? Of course, now you're married to a famous family that everybody in the nation knows, and now you're on Johnny Carson, the top late-night host of probably all time. What was he like?
We had a good time together on his program. He had people who had become known and picked up me up one day. I was known at that time. It was when I had produced the procedure, the Heimlich maneuver, that saved people who were choking to death. I might say about that, it used to be that the Red Cross, since 1933, taught people to hit someone on the back, give a back slap if a person was choking. Not one person was saved. As a matter of fact, if you slapped the back went forward. A piece of meat or whatever blocking off the trachea, the air tube. When the body went forward, the object did not. It went deeper and tighter instead of getting the block out. So it became very well known, fortunately. And I will just add, just because we'll be saving lives, I hope, on this program, that the Red Cross had not saved a life with the back slap, as we know. And the Heimlich maneuver caused the object to fly out of the throat and does it immediately. So if you do, they say, do five back slaps, which is terribly wrong, and people can die as a result of that. We were just talking about the maneuver and getting into it. He said something about the maneuver that was supposed to be a joke. I corrected him and said, no, you have to do this. And he just wanted to sort of cover up his error. He turned to me when I corrected him and said, that's one, Dr. Heimlich. And then we had another incident. I said something, and he said, that's two, Dr. Heimlich. And the audience laughed, you know, and each time he said it. There was a very beautiful actress on the program with us. And after he demonstrated the maneuver on her, she turned around and kissed him. And I said, I invent the maneuver, and he gets the kiss. I said, that's one, Johnny. The crowd went wild. But we both had a heck of a good time together.
You talk a lot about your parents, a great influence on your life. Your dad gave so much to the community. He was working in the prison system, helping the prisoners who really nobody helps sometimes. What was it that maybe one of the biggest lessons that you learned from your parents?
Well, I learned a lot from my parents. My father was a social worker for prisoners in the state of New York. And he would go around to the prisoners and he would help them. Some of them he knew were innocent and he fought until he got them out. But when I was about five and my sister was 17, we would go to the prisons, and this all seemed natural to us. And we would just walk through the prisons, and the guards would open the door and they would slam shut behind us. And if the prisoner's door was open, we would sit down in his room and talk to them. And one day we came back to where we always came, to the warden's office. He was another man there. He turned out to be one of the prison authorities who was visiting the warden. And as Warden Laws was very famous for having made a movie on Sing Sing Prison, he said, Warden, he said, you let these children walk through the prison this way. And the warden said, oh, everyone knows they're Phil Heimlich's children. Well, basically, that's my parents. My mother was equally helpful to other people, and they taught me something. I hope I'm living up to their thoughts.
No, oh, I'm sure you are, and actually, to a lot of people who thank you for a lot of the things that you've done in medicine. 94 years old, I think, at this recording. Is that correct?
That is correct.
What do you attribute to this long, healthy life that you've lived?
Well, I suppose I have to say my father lived till 100. My sister is 99 and very active. I might also say this about my sister. When I was in the Navy during the war, she was in the Navy. She was a wave officer. She was stationed in California. When I was on my way to China, I was on a troop train going across the country, and they didn't tell us where we were going until about 2 days before we got there. They told us that we're going to Los Angeles. Well, I know my sister Cecilia was there, and I sneaked off the train. If it pulled out, I'd have been out of luck. I'd have been condemned. But I called her and told her we're getting in 2 days. And she was there to wait for me. And we stayed at a hotel there in Los Angeles. And the next day she took me to the ship that was taking me overseas, which was wonderful and meaningful to me in my life. We had a picture of us taken in our uniforms that one night we spent together. That picture is in my book.
Well, the book is Heimlich's Maneuvers, My 70 Years of Life-Saving Innovation, according to Dr. Henry J. Heimlich. Now, Dr. Heimlich, I'm sure you'll probably have another book for the next half of your life, eh?
Well, there are two things that are the important thing in my book. One is it will save the lives. The things that people can do to save lives, if they're not doctors, as you know, that is being done in thousands of cases. People who do this will be able to save their children, and in some cases now, the children save a parent. So that the most important thing to me about the book is that people will learn how to save lives. But there is another thing that I'd like to mention. I believe in world peace, and the world is in terrible shape today. Children, every day in the newspapers or on television, children in countries throughout the world are being killed, shot and killed, and places where that's going on. I had a long history in China. After the war, they found me, and I would go back, and I did some research there. And the Chinese people I found were very fine people. They are now, when I was there, people were starving to death in the street and dying. They are now the second economy in the world, second only to the United States. I have a program. I call it A Caring World. I believe that China and the United States should get together and should help different countries, picking suitable countries, help them to maintain peace and to keep a good income coming into the country. So it will help the world. I call it A Caring World. It's interesting that a program has developed and they are meeting with Chinese to work together. They are building together and the expenses will be paid in China. In one of the areas I had been in, they are building a medical college and a hospital. There are at present, and you see, 1,200 Chinese students. This is my program, A Caring World, and it is my desire to see that that is established. as soon as possible. When I got the concept of how to save a life by pressing under the diaphragm and under the rib cage, you're pressing the diaphragm upward, compressing the lungs, which blows the object out. 2 months after I had gotten it out, and I didn't know for sure it was going to work. I did studies that showed it would work, that it would cause the object to come out. And it was something that anybody could do. And as we know, children are now saving many lives with the Heimlich maneuver. I had, after 2 months, and what I had done is written a newspaper article on how to do it to save a life. And in fact, I had done studies that showed it would work, but I could never be sure. But I did get it out because I wanted it to save lives. After 2 months, I got a phone call. On the phone were three editors of the Journal of the American Medical Association, JAMA, the most prominent medical association. And the head man said, "Dr. Heimlich, in 2 months you have saved so many lives. We feel this should be named for you." So I thanked them very much and said thank you. And he said, "We don't know whether to call it the Heimlich method or the Heimlich maneuver." And I said, "You're the editors. You should make that decision." And he said, "Well, a maneuver is something you do once and you repeat it several times. A method is a series of steps that you go through to figure out whether it could save someone." I said, "I'll make it the maneuver."
That's a great story.
And that's how it became the Heimlich Maneuver.
Well, the brand new book is Heimlich's Maneuvers, My 70 Years on Life-Saving Innovation, according to Henry J. Heimlich, M.D. Dr. Heimlich, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. I hope we'll save some lives.
You've been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Dr. Henry J. Heimlich, author of his brand new book, Heimlich's Maneuvers. To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.